Welcome back to the Business Edge, where we unpack the issues that matter most to Islanders. We've been doing this for almost 2 decades. We've traditionally been published in print, but we've moved now to the podcast. So this is Business Edge 2.0. And for the podcast, we've broken the sections of the articles down into segments. So they're more digestible and they make a little bit more sense when we're communicating through podcast. So I'm your host, longtime taxpayer and healthcare consumer, healthcare partner, an analyst with over 25 years experience watching, advising, and assessing the healthcare sector. And let me tell you that the healthcare system is at a serious crossroads. I'm Blake Doyle, and the publisher, author, and creator of Business Edge under the Dew, Island Dew. Politicians love to champion success. They love the ribbon cutting, the headlines, the photo ops, and the shiny new initiatives. But when it comes to the budget, it continues to balloon. When the system strains, the workforce collapses under pressure, and the silence from the politicians becomes deafening. Today, we're going to cut through that silence and address some of the issues and present solutions. This episode is based on the recent Business Edge editorials, and it sets the stage for a four-part series on the state of healthcare in PEI. The first session today is going to be on operations. Then we'll look at human resources, we'll look at financing and sustainability, and then the future that we're building together today or that we're ignoring. This isn't an attack on healthcare individuals or where we've gotten to today. It's a taxpayer's lens on what's working, what isn't, and what choices, realistic choices, must be made of PEIs to avoid a spiraling into a healthcare debt abyss. So let's begin. First segment is setting the stage. The most recent premier who's left office, Dennis King, his legacy and the cost of those headlines. So let's start with the political reality. Health, education, and infrastructure have always been the sacred three pillars of PEI politics. But today, cost of living, housing, environment, and economic security compete fiercely for this attention. Everything has become a priority, and therefore nothing is a priority. Into this mix steps Premier Dennis King, who has by most accounts staked his political legacy on healthcare. To be fair, thinking about government, it has moved very quickly on several fronts. It reconstituted the Health PEI board and senior leadership. It launched a medical school at lightning speed, opened community-based care hubs, and trying to bend a population boom into a manageable path forward. All of these have consequences, and they can all be debated, but that's where we're at today. On the surface, this looks like progress, but if you dig a little bit deeper, another story starts to emerge, and speed is not always a virtue. Healthcare spending, which historically climbs about 5 to 8% annually, and that's pretty consistent over the last 20, 30-year budgets in PEI, but it's recently jumped over 14% and now consumes a whopping 34% of the provincial budget. And remember, that's 34% of a budget already running an $85 million deficit. This isn't sustainable, it isn't rational, and it certainly isn't strategic. The former premier may have well believed that he was strengthening healthcare, but by expanding bureaucracy faster than frontline capacity, by pushing a medical school without first stabilizing our current delivery system, and by relying on short-term salary incentives that can't compete with larger provinces, he may have set us back a decade in a term and a half. While some of these are well-intended, the consequence of these pushes is really profound. And, you know, I'm most startled at the speed at which the medical school, against great advice and a lot of conversation and resistance of the frontline healthcare providers who are really struggling to manage their practice, let alone adding additional burden. None of that was considered. This was a priority. It was pushed quickly, and maybe it was pushed as the intention to head out the door was already determined. So this is an uncomfortable truth that we must face. Not all progress is actually progress. Some of it is political theater dressed up as reform. Islanders deserve better. A fragile system will unravel and it may be presently showing the early signs of this tension. Let's move on to segment number two. It's a short history. So how we got here. To understand where we're headed, we need to understand the foundations on which we're standing. PEI's healthcare system has undergone major transformations over the last century, from segregated hospitals based on religious affiliation, with in 1879, the Charlottetown Hospital opens. In 1884, the PEI Hospital opens. In 1969, government takes over both. Ironically, same year that government took over the educational post-secondary education by forming UPEI and also disbanding these religious segmentations. Not that long ago, in 1982, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital opens, centralizing care in the capital city. And in 2010, Health PEI is created as a single health authority. The philosophy was sound. One island health system, the right care, at the right place, by the right provider. But something happened along this path. We began as a consolidation toward efficiency and grew into an increasingly heavy administrative apparatus. More managers, more committees, more coordination meetings, and more cost. Meanwhile, frontline staff, nurses, family physicians, LPNs, RCWs, paramedics, they were left to carry a workload that was expanded faster than the system supporting them. This mismatch between administrative growth and clinical capacity is now one of the system's core problems, and it's costing us financially, operationally, and in public trust. Not to mention the system itself is under great strain, and despite some of the very progressive enhancements that have been made, including salary, the strain remains, and salary doesn't always motivate people. There's a point where there's other motivators that just can't seem to be accommodated in the system under so much demand. Let's move on to the next segment, human resourcing and administration. The workforce is the system, and it's on a brink. Let's be blunt. PEI's biggest healthcare problem is people. More accurately, the lack of them, the burnout of them, and the inability for the province to keep them. Health PEI employs thousands of dedicated professionals, but every one of them will tell you the same thing. The system is chronically understaffed and structurally misaligned. The 2024-2025 budget tries to address this. It provides some attempts to address the challenges we're facing. There's a $7.1 million for more doctors and resident seats. There's $6.2 million for recruitment and $2.2 million for training. RCWs, LPNs, paramedics, and RNs. This is fine, necessary even, but it doesn't solve the underlying issue. We're trying to staff a 2025 system with a 2020 or 2010 organizational model. We're still over-centralized. We still underemploy frontline leadership. We still make HR reactive instead of strategic. And we still substitute incentives for retention. A $10,000 bonus might bring somebody here initially, but it won't keep them here when Nova Scotia, for instance, is offering $30,000 more per year. And all the provinces are going to get more aggressive as their populations demand services. So, you know, how does a small province like PEI, who stepped forward, we've pushed the boundaries, we've raised the bar, but we can't compete now with better heeled provinces? Provinces with more financial capacity. And I think that's where we're going to start to really feel the pressure. When Alberta doubles the offers, how are we going to compete? And with the state of current pipelines and potential economic growth of our Western neighbors, this is going to become a greater constraint. Maybe our doctors would travel there. Maybe our patients will have to as well. So when our rural workloads burn out, even the most dedicated staff can't withstand the pressures. So this is the administrative paradox. Every system needs administration, but PEI's administrative structure has become too layered, too slow, too reactive, and too disconnected from frontline realities. The most predictable thing about Health PEI today is that the roles shift every 2 weeks. People barely get stabilized in their role when they're rotated out and a new person comes in needing to learn, get up to speed, and maybe 2 weeks is an exaggeration, but there is a tremendous amount of movement in a structural organization that needs stability now more than ever. Restructuring is constant. Priorities change with political wind and direction. Accountability becomes diluted in communities rather than concentrated in leadership. This isn't mismanagement by individuals. It's structural drift. So what do we need to change? Well, there's some realistic things that PEI must consider. Shrink the size of the bureaucracy, not the front line. Freeze administrative hiring. Redirect savings into clinical roles. There's an article not too long ago, I think in The Guardian, that identified hiring over the last 2 years had increased 35%. There's no place for these people to go, and technology can really take the roles that we're overburdening the system with, and we're just creating a mire of bureaucracy that slows everything down. Another thing we need to do is empower local health teams. Let communities manage community care. Push decision-making down, not up. We need to create a workforce stability plan. Retention bonuses tied to service time. Funded professional development. Guaranteed rural rotations for physicians. A return commitment for PEI medical grads. In fact, today, graduates who attend the UPEI medical school, I don't think have any commitment of service to PEI. And the cost to get these students educated is substantial for Islanders. We expect that they're going to provide service, and many may, but there's no obligation. We need to address burnout head on. Mental health supports for staff isn't a perk. Today, it's a requirement. The entire society infrastructure is struggling with anxiety and mental health, and that's not different in the medical communities. We need to stop compensation arms race. PEI can't outpay larger provinces. We must out-innovate them in culture, community, and autonomy. And we need to work with industry. We don't need to build bureaucracy. We need to empower the enterprise. I'll give you an example. It's a little bit off topic, but we have a little software product. It's an AI platform called LaborMine. And its goal is to retain key people, identify weaknesses, and then address those challenges proactively. We've got over 2 decades of research and experience using AI and artificial analytics or advanced analytics, and we address workforce vulnerabilities before they become a concern. So there's lots of opportunity to engage in the private sector as opposed to build these bureaucratic silos and continue to hire resources, stripping industry, and not creating a prosperous environment, which also contributes to the taxations that then is required to support the healthcare system and other taxation requirements that we appreciate, like roads and education. Let's look at operations. So it's a small system with big inefficiencies. Operationally, PEI system tries to be everything everywhere. The result, small, scattered, underutilized services with unnecessary duplication. Then we layer localized political pressure by candidates or vulnerable constituents where newer facilities, CT scanners, and other infrastructure is demanded and ultimately provided. Major problem, over-reliance on the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and the Prince County Hospital. These hospitals handle far too much acute care burden, while rural facilities remain underused. And often, more often than not, you hear on the radio that an emergency room is closed because of lack of staff. Even these two primary care facilities, QEH, PCH, they're not interchangeable. Operations are both unique and both have deficiencies. So there probably could be more consolidation of service and consolidation of care. We're not that big a province geographically. Communication gaps. A mix of paper recordings, inconsistent EHR adoption, and siloed provider groups creates delays and potential errors. We have emergency room congestion, not because Islanders overuse the emergency room, but because primary care access remains insufficient. And we have inefficient non-emergency transport. So this is an issue where ambulances are used for tasks better suited to dedicated transfer teams. And we're, again, burdening the systems that don't need additional burden. So some practical solutions. We need to expand targeted services in rural hospitals, use community facilities for diagnostic low-risk procedures, and chronic disease management. It should be the first line of defense, and I think in some respects we are doing that, but we can always do better. We need to implement true collaborative care models. Family doctors can't carry the burden of primary care alone. We need to finish the job on digital health. A unified and consolidated EHR across all sites is non-negotiable. It needs to be accessible by any healthcare professionals, and we have multiple competing platforms, which is just not efficient. We need to finish the job on digital health with unified platforms, just being a non-negotiable. Invest in telemedicine and remote diagnostics. The island is perfectly sized for a hybrid care model. We could be an environment that has a microcosm where we can beta test solutions. We're nimble, we're small, and traditionally we can get things done quickly with an entrepreneurial attitude. That is being suppressed by a burdensome bureaucracy, but there's no reason that PEI can't be a model of success for other jurisdictions. We need to use data to manage patient flow. Predictive analytics can reduce emergency bottlenecks dramatically, and this is where we can labor mine the data. Always got to get a good plug in there for labormine.com. And we need lean management done properly. This isn't corporate jargon. Jargon is proven efficiency tool when implemented consistently. So probably need less management, less oversight, less structural bureaucracy, and more frontline action. So the next segment is the future. And what will healthcare look like in, let's say, 2040? It's not that far off. The future, it's both exciting and it's frightening. PEI's challenges? Well, the island will soon have 30% of its population over 65 years of age. And that in and of itself creates profound demographic issues, both in retiring healthcare professionals who'll be leaving service, but also increasing demands and comorbidity that we see an aging population with more longevity and more services required. This, I hope, is being addressed by decision makers in the system, because it's kind of evident that the politicians cannot provide that kind of oversight. Another challenge, we have chronic disease management will overwhelm the current resources, and that's just a sheer function of demographic changing, unless we have pretty proactive interventions. Another one is workforce shortages will worsen as Canadian competition intensifies, and we cannot financially compete with what's going to be coming at us as demands increase uniformly across all geographies, not just within Canada. Technology will change medicine faster than our institutions can adapt, and that's happening today. We see with our labor mind the adaptation of analytics, artificial intelligence. It's moving so quickly. Guarantee that organizations are not equipped to enable, support, or implement the changes that are rapidly happening. And more progressive jurisdictions, certainly in the U.S., in pockets within Canadian centers, they are adapting. And finally, costs will rise faster than revenue. And that's indefinitely going to be a concern going forward. You can see at 34% of our GDP, the healthcare costs are almost unmanaged today. But there's also opportunity. PEI can be a model jurisdiction. Agile enough to adapt innovations, larger systems can't. We're a perfect environment for experimentation and to test new systems. Six key recommendations for the future. Number one, adopt AI aggressively. Predictive diagnosis, patient monitoring, workforce allocation, administrative automation. These are all things that are accessible today, yearned for by progressive professionals and accepted by many of the constituents who use the healthcare system. In fact, I just wrote a book called Triage, and we talk about a lot of these systems, the impacts, and how quickly they can be implemented. So they're here today, and progressive organizations are going to adapt. Non-progressive ones are going to wither. AI won't replace clinicians, but it should replace bureaucracy. And it should aid in intelligent decision-making through data presentation and data digestion. Number two, invest in home-based and community care. Hospitals should be the last, not the first, point of contact. The centers of community care have been a great suggestion. They seem to be implementing well and being well received, but they need to be accelerated. They need to be implemented faster, and they need to be augmented with the right resources as quickly as possible. Number three, build a sustainable workforce pipeline. Use a new medical school, but also ensure graduates stay. Today, as I understand it, there's no guarantee of service for those who have entered the program, and that really probably should be a prerequisite for even being admitted into the program. Number four, leverage public-private partnerships, not for privatization, but for modernization. Work outside of the bureaucratic bubble and seek solutions that aren't necessarily traditionally in your environment. Number five, fund preventative care like it matters, because it does. Every dollar spent on prevention saves $3 to $4 down the road. And finally, shift to outcome-based funding. So we should be rewarding systems that improve health of Islanders, not those that simply produce more services. I think that's part of the cycle that we, as government observers, get cycled into. We're not really improving things. We're just adding complexity and cost. And I think that's a paralysis that a giant system like health has certainly become victim of. Segment number six is the taxpayer's conclusion and the hard choices that lay ahead. Here's the truth as I see it. We're living in a period of health inflation unlike anything PEI has ever experienced. Costs are rising faster than revenue. Bureaucracy is expanding faster than frontline services. Political ambition is growing faster than capacity. So all Islanders are caught in the middle of this cycle. Government may genuinely believe that they are strengthening healthcare, and in fairness, some initiatives like community clinics are steps in the right direction. But without structural reform, without operational modernization, without workforce stabilization, without embracing the technologies that reshaped global health, and without honest conversations about affordability, there's limited potential for PEI to succeed. PEI is at a crossroads, and we do have a choice when it comes to healthcare. We can become the most innovative small healthcare system in Canada, or we can be the most expensive failed one. This podcast series is not about laying blame. It's about accountability, transparency, solutions, and a belief that PEI, because of its size, can become a global leader in efficient, sustainable, technological, enhanced care. For over 20 years, the Business Edge has really challenged Islanders to create conversation. The intention of the original documents that were published in newsprint was really to cause a conversation. Sometimes that happened online around kitchen tables or directly with me. But it's really about encouraging that conversation, because through conversation, solutions can be adopted and considered, and status quo can be contested, challenged. So again, with healthcare, it's another area that Islanders need to have a serious dialogue about and reflect in how we want to be administered and what we can afford in the future. But we have to do the hard work now. We can't delay, and we can't rely necessarily on politicians who are motivated by different and often irrational factors to make the right decisions. The administration should be able to make these decisions, if not paralyzed with bureaucracy. We need to trim things up, tighten delivery, expand where expansion is required that provides the best service to Islanders, and that's not necessarily on the bureaucracy back end. It's on the front end and the front line, and that's what people expect and want. Thank you for joining me today for this episode of the Business Edge and evaluation of our healthcare system. In the next part, we'll take a deeper dive into human resources and look at why PEI's risk of losing the very people who hold the system together. We do see them departing. In fact, when you hear the announcements of how many new physicians we've brought in, there's always attrition. So we might bring in 20 new physicians, but we lose 15. Net positive, but why are we losing? If it's through retirement, can't do much about the demographic shift. But if it's for other factors and people are leaving for other provinces, we need to understand that and have an honest conversation about why that is occurring and rectify the issues that are causing people to depart, because it is manageable. Until next time, stay informed, stay engaged and keep demanding better, but be careful on where you apply your criticism. There are solutions, and it takes all Islanders to be supportive of making the right corrective decisions and being reasonable and realistic in what your expectations are. On behalf of the Business Edge, this is Blake Doyle. Thank you very much.